deep in the Swedish forest, the only individualist radio program in Europe. This is BSI Radio International. Scandinavia to the Tippecanoe River and all points in between, and directly to you. Victor Sierra India to all those in the skip zone, this is the voice of the sovereign individual. My name is Paul Lambert. How appropriate that BSI Radio International should be on at 7 p.m. Eastern. That is the Eastern Daylight Saving Time Zone in the continent of North America. If you're like many other people in this listening area, you may have just got finished doing something that's a bit of a ritual, that is, watching the 6 o'clock news. Perhaps your whole family got together to sit around and watch it, or maybe it's just something that just Dad likes to do. How did you feel when you were watching it? And how did you feel right after you finished watching it? Imagine what if you did not catch the 6 o'clock news tonight. What do you think you would have missed? Did you learn anything substantial that you did not know before? Did the news tonight inspire you to look more into a new subject or a topic? Was there any particular story that persuaded you to take some course of action you otherwise would not have done? More fundamentally, do you even remember any of the news stories? Now, come on, it was only a few minutes ago. What was the single biggest story in your local news? How about in the national news or the international news? Or did you simply find it relaxing and recreational to sit down and absorb the news? I've long had mixed feelings about the news as such, but lately I've really taken to notice that the news, be it in the papers, or over the radio, or on the telly, is really made out to be a bigger deal than it is. It certainly seems like a big deal. When I was a kid, taking the news seriously was a sign of being a grown-up. My parents watched it almost every single night they were home. They probably still do. It gave me, as a child, a sense that my parents were in charge of the world, that they were looking out to see what everyone was doing all over the world, and that somehow the whole world answered to them. It's easy to assume that news is a big deal, given how much time we devote to it. Consider just the 6 o'clock news on the telly alone. Such programs are usually 1 hour long, and if you watch it every day, that means you will spend 365 hours a year watching news. That's 15 days straight in 1 year. About half a month of constant news watching. We must certainly be getting something out of it. Do we devote that kind of time and attention to anything else in our lives? Surely it must be very, very important to watch the news 1 hour a day. See, what can we do in 1 hour in a day? A modest yet beneficial amount of exercise can be done in an hour a day. It takes an hour to make a good home-cooked meal, maybe to bake a cake from scratch. Well, you could mow the lawn, probably both the front and the backyard, in 1 hour. Or if you value an hour of sedentary activity, you could learn to play the piano or a new language. Devoting 1 hour a day will make you proficient in probably about a year. You could read or write or paint. Still, if you really insist on a passive form of entertainment, 1 hour is the time it takes to watch a proper documentary. You could also get a detective show in, or perhaps even two situation comedies if you're in the mood. Of course, 1 hour is the time it takes to listen to VSI Radio International. Right now, just think about all those people in a central time zone in North America and what they're missing. It's 6 o'clock where they are. Not only are the faithful news watchers in Chicago, St. Louis, and Milwaukee missing VSI, but they're news watching cuts into an entire week of some of the best on WBCQ, from Ramsey's Roadhouse, Le Show with Harry Shearer, the inappropriately named Alan Sane, and the Fred Flintstone Music Show. Thankfully, on Sunday, they'll be able to catch an episode of Marianne's Attic before the news is on. However, on a more serious note, I don't mean to suggest that people need to go do some of these things I mentioned just because I think they're a better way to spend time. The problem is that other people tell me that these are the sort of things that they would like to do if only they could find the time, somehow. So far, I've only addressed TV news, yet the news is very pervasive. In addition to watching the TV news, most people listen to it on the car radio. On the hour, every hour. God forbid we should miss some juicy morsel or the latest scoop. While waiting at the doctor's office or in a hotel reception, there are often newspapers left there to read while you're waiting. One trend I've noticed lately on television is the spam. What I mean by that is I notice all the distractions from the main program, little pop-ups showing up while the program you want to watch is still running, announcing what the next program will be, or what the new series will be starting in the proximate future, or worst of all, these sneak peek headlines from the upcoming newscast. Coming up at 6, Man Bites Dog. Tune in for the details. So not only do we have news on the telly, we have in spam form news that there's going to be news. In my research into this topic, I found some fascinating insights into the effect of news on the human mind, especially from one gentleman named Rolf De Belli. I was surprised at first by some of his assertions, but I'm beginning to recognize the correctness of his conclusions. He finds that the consumption of news has a deleterious effect on the human mind. I might not share all his conclusions, but in fairness, this is a matter to which he has given much more thought than I have, so I'll consider his point of view. Personally, one thing I do notice is that, especially in such news-junky societies as Scandinavia, the news, if nothing else, is making people think that they are smarter than they really are. I have made a conscious effort to avoid news altogether for the better part of half a year now. As I don't have a television, that was easy in one large respect, but I also had to break the habit of reading papers that lie around, or having the radio on during news time. Have I missed anything important? That's hard to say, but what I have found is that I have far less disruption and anxiety in my life while having more time. I can think about things more deeply and carefully, and I think I have more insights. News reports do not represent the real world. We notice shocking stories and sensationalist presentations about scandal and danger. We forget that behind sensational stories are a long series of events that were slow to develop. We're not interested in the subtle and have no attention span for events that are protracted in time. Thus, we face shock and awe when a spectacular event occurs, and the news seldom helps us explain them. Instead, we are left with the idea of a dangerous world over which nobody has control.
Take chest, and she knows just what it takes to make it pro blush. All the boys think she's a spy. She's got Betty Davis eyes. And she'll tease you. She knows just what it takes to make it pro blush. All the boys think she's a spy. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She teases you. Betty Davis eyes. She'll expose you when she snows you. She knows ya. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll tease you.
We humans are very visually oriented, and media focuses on the highly visible. Even if the more subtle information is more important, we are fed with the gripping and thrilling information instead that can be both scary and titillating. Such pieces of shock and awe are easy to digest. Furthermore, news plays to our emotions far more than it does to our intellect. Take the following event. A car drives over a bridge and the bridge collapses. What does the news media focus on? On the car, on the person in the car, where he came from, where he planned to go, how he experienced the crash, if he survived, what kind of person he is or was. But that is all completely irrelevant. What is relevant? The structural stability of the bridge. That's the underlying risk that has been lurking and could lurk in other bridges. That is the lesson to be learned from this event. The car doesn't matter at all. Any car could have caused the bridge to collapse. It could have been a strong wind or a dog walking over the bridge. So why does the media cover the car? Because it's flashy, it's dramatic, it's a person, not an abstraction, and it's news that's cheap to produce. As a result of news, we walk around with a completely wrong risk map in our heads. Now, a risk map is what Debelli described as just our world view as to what is important and not, what is dangerous and not. Consider the phenomenon of Halloween in North America. At school, they're told that on Halloween, just before they go out, to always make sure that you don't eat anything until you get home, just in case some crazy person's somehow poisoned or put a pin or razor blade into some of the treats. Now, having your parents check your candy before you eat them is a good policy in itself, and I suggest that to children. But is it really worth scaring children into making them believe that such crazy people exist everywhere, this strange or danger phenomenon? I'd be interested in getting some real police statistics on the actual occurrences of strangers adulterating Halloween treats. I'm sure it's a rare event if it's happened at all. Certainly some very large cities in the United States will have no cases on file of such a thing ever happening. Yet, young children grow up thinking strangers are in and of themselves dangerous. Now, of course, I can hear it now, someone saying, well, try and tell that to the mother of a child who's become sick or died or has become kidnapped. No, of course I'm not going to say that to such a mother. Why would I do that? That's just rude. In her grief, am I just going to remind her of how extraordinarily unlucky she was? This sort of thing almost never happens, but hey, it happened to her. How odd. What a dumb thing to say. But what Belli calls a risk map, our understanding of real dangers, it is just wrong in our heads, and we pay attention to the wrong things, even things that aren't about direct and present dangers. We overrate things like the collapse of Lehman Brothers while not examining fiscal irresponsibility as such. Policymakers continue with the same irresponsible behavior now that the hot story is no longer in the news cycle. The pundits express surprise and shock when the Supreme Court of the United States upholds an unconstitutional bill after they were so certain that it would be struck down. News media has only the attention span of the here and now. Of course, this only reinforces the worldview that life is complicated and unpredictable. After all, if even the experts are surprised, how can we be prepared for anything? Of course, a serious student of history and civilization would not at all have been surprised by the Supreme Court decision on the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And in this respect, it does not matter whether you're for or against government and healthcare. It's not even about the personage of President Obama. It is simply that any law, bill, directive, or measure that would, in any way and for any reason, increase the power of the state at the expense of individual freedom tends to pass without much resistance on the part of the state. Any measure that would serve to return individual freedom at the expense of the state, giving up some of its power, is either doomed to fail, or if not, it only comes about through the most arduous and acrimonious of efforts. It's not a question of individual politicians being smarter or dumber or more honest or dishonest. It is simply the nature of the state. Of course, the news made us all think that there was serious opposition to the bill from many corners, and there was, but it is not enough to counter the basic inertia of the apparatus of any state. The upholding of Obamacare was a foregone conclusion. I would have been surprised had it not been upheld. Albert Nock wrote of this phenomenon of a gradual state growth in 1935 at a time when he witnessed it on a diabolical scale then in Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia. However, the steps toward an ever-encroaching state are subtle and nuanced and therefore beyond the scope of the news. In fact, news types, both purveyors and consumers, may not have the patience for learning the long history behind the big scoop. In panel discussions discussing, for example, the Arab-Israeli conflict, moderators explicitly discourage any talk of history and simply insist on asking, where do we go from here? News has no power of explanation. They are little morsels of information bubbling on the surface. They give no indication of the deeper causes behind the disparate events. A news organization may provide accurate facts, and a conscientious thinker or someone who truly can consume news in a responsible way may be able to put those facts into a context to help him understand the broader principle. But that's not what most of us do. People collect these bits of trivia and confuse a vast collection of facts for understanding and knowledge. Such does not help you to understand the world. The individual facts themselves mean nothing without the threads that connect them, but these take time to digest. I don't think it's an accident that news on the telly is on at 6 o'clock or some other time shortly after the workday. After work, many of us don't want to make the mental effort needed to understand anything, and rather just digest what the news typically feeds us. Anecdotes, scandals, pictures, human interest stories. They're cheap to produce, they can be compiled quickly, and they're generally well-liked. Having a bunch of unconnected facts in your mind does not help you to make better decisions. Decision-making requires abstraction and context, two things sadly lacking in the news. In fact, by collecting an array of so-called factoids, you may find it hard to see the big picture. There's no evidence that news junkies are more successful people than others. DeBelli once more. He suggests that reading the news as a way of understanding the world is worse than not reading anything. It's very similar to another famous quotation. The man to whom it's ascribed escapes me for the moment. I don't remember if it was Mark Twain or one of the American founding fathers who said that a man who reads nothing is better informed than the man who reads nothing but newspapers. Still, I encourage people to read. Read books. Read good magazines about topics you find interesting. Read history. Read philosophy. Read about psychology and medicine. Read about science generally. Read about religion, even those that are not your own. Read about foreign languages. Seems to be a lot to read. Well, if you spent the same amount of time at these pursuits as you might currently do with news, you'll find that before long you will have quite a lot under your belt. Don't forget to read good fiction as well, be it classical literature or otherwise. Behind every fiction work is the man who wrote it and his life philosophy and worldview. A good writer must necessarily bring his story together and get you to find the threads that connect everything in it. It is a good exercise in training your rational thought.
Only.
Now, in many of my lively discussions with other people, I'm often accused of being contrarian. People think I just simply play the devil's advocate and sit on the other side just because I get a kick out of winding people up, pretending not to understand the obvious. After all, how can someone be against news? News is a public service. But what upsets people more is something else I tell them about what's on television in general. It's my contention that the most informative presentations on television are the commercial advertisements. That's not to say I think they're the best part, the most enjoyable part, the most entertaining part, but in fact, the only informative things shown on television are the commercial advertisements. That's to say, it is the only thing that has information that at least some people consuming it are likely to have an interest in. It's quite possible that someone will be in the market for a new car or a trip to Hawaii or a pair of boots, or a good hamburger or an ice cream cone. Everything else on television is entertainment. That includes the news. I mean, except for the weather report or traffic report or some other public announcements, there is very little that's on television that you can actually use. We watch it. We listen to news. We read it because it's entertaining. We use it to relax. We like to be thrilled. It's interesting when people get killed. It is exciting when cars crash or when buildings fall down or if there's a fire. Think about the special bulletins. When you're watching one program and suddenly we interrupt this program for a special bulletin, why don't we take offense at that? There are people who are offended at commercials. Perhaps because commercials are true information that we resent the fact that it interrupts our entertainment. We're getting into a program and suddenly interrupted for some real information that at least some people might be able to use. But we don't get that same sort of feeling when we have news bulletins. I remember a news bulletin when I was very young, it was 1986, watching cartoons on television, and the news bulletin interrupted to bring us live to the summit meeting between Reagan and Gorbachev in Reykjavik. As a 10-year-old child, how interested do you think I would be in that? Historically, it was an important event. There's no way the news people could have known that, and it wasn't depicted as historically important, but not in any sense that could really be taken seriously. But interrupting for news is always okay. Interrupting for commercials is not. I don't mean to open up any old wounds or pour salt in any currently open wounds. I know that the war in Iraq has been a very divisive issue in the United States. That still is quite contentious. I'll just say that the first time I heard on Sky News of a certain war weariness among the American people was 3 weeks into the war in 2003. Now, with all due respect to those people who may have experienced war weariness, I believe that much of that is simply because the American people got tired of that movie on CNN. Now, the rest of us in the world saw it as well. I watched the entire war on Sky News, minute by minute. They did all sorts of battlefields. In fact, I'm almost a bit embarrassed and ashamed to admit it, but you know, I had a flatmate at the time, and we worked in the same place. Got home from work, and we were really tired. What do you want to do? Oh, let's just relax, watch a bit of war on the television. See, news has sort of blurred that distinction between entertainment and information and fact and fantasy. The fact that men were killing and dying on a battlefield for a political cause was just some light relaxation before going to bed. See, news sends out a double message. On one hand, that we're constantly told that we must do something, that the sky is falling, it's all our fault if we don't react. But at the same time, we're constantly told that while we are looking for so many solutions, no solution is possible. This generates a fatalistic view, since most of the stories on news are situations that you have no power to control. This is really unnatural. In the history of man used news in a very direct and practical way. where a new fishing spot was discovered, or a hunting pasture found, or a new berry patch, an invading tribe, or a coming storm. News was something you reacted to, was something you acted upon, and it was vital to your very survival. It's not so today, and the daily repetition makes us passive. In the end, we become pessimistic and, yes, fatalistic. News promotes a sense of victimhood. It's a learned helplessness. The Belly hypothesizes that there's an organic connection between the increase in cases of depression and the increase in news consumption. If you'd like to write to VSI Radio International, please contact us by email at feedback@vsiradio.org. Once again, that's feedback@vsiradio.org. Feel free to ask any questions, leave any comments, or have suggestions for future programs. I find already after just one program that I need to apologize to my listeners, especially to any of you who may have been kind enough to send a letter or postcard. I'm afraid that the address I gave you to the mail drop in Stockholm last week was not correct. For reasons that are a bit too complicated to go into right now, that address will not be available. I will get a new mail drop in the future, and once that address has been ascertained, I will be happy to give it to you. I look forward to getting your letters and cards. If you've sent one already, then I'm afraid it will be returned to you. I certainly won't get it myself. Still, remember that you could always send me an email at feedback@vsiradio.org. That's feedback@victorsierraindiaradio.org. Those of you without access to email, I do apologize. I'm afraid I can only take email at this time, but I will inform you as soon as the mail drop becomes available again. I'd like to say hello to a few people who have responded to the first inaugural episode last week. First of all, to David O. in Sherbrooke, Quebec, Canada. David O. and I go way back. He actually was the one that cracked the whip and really drove me to finally come and get onto radio. I'd like to thank you very much, David. I'd also like to say thank you for the kind email I got from Michael Taniva. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. I don't know if that really is your surname or you just have a fondness for Maori folklore and New Zealand culture. Either way, thank you very much for your letter, and I hope that I'll hear from you again. I'd like also to say hello to Paul Whitmer. Thank you for listening, and I hope to hear from you again. A big thanks also goes to Ramsey down at the Roadhouse for giving me some free advertising on his own show, Ramsey's Roadhouse. He's a down-to-earth fellow who's not really afraid to speak his mind, and he does so in abundance every Monday night at 7 p.m. in the Eastern Time Zone of North America, or 2300 UTC. Ramsey's Roadhouse has been on for about 3 years and is a well-established show here on WBCQ. Now, Ramsey put a plug in for my show before he even got to hear it. And so that was a real giant leap of faith on his part to endorse my program without knowing if he'd really like it or not and how it'd turn out. But then again, that's what free speech is all about. That's what free speech radio is all about. And Ramsey is certainly someone who gets it, as do I. The only thing I don't get is why don't more people take advantage of free speech radio? You often hear the complaints about corporate media and the media bias, how they dominate all the media, and it's hard for the little guy to get his voice out. In facing off against the big corporate network media, the metaphor of David and Goliath comes very much to mind. But remember that it was David who won. And while you may reasonably assume that you don't have the help of the Almighty on your side, you do have certain advantages on international shortwave that the big networks do not. International shortwave remains the most cost-effective form of electronic mass media. The rates at WBCQ are very, very low. As an international shortwave station, you don't have the same FCC content controls that the big networks have to contend with, nor do you have to pay any performance rights fees. The big national media has so much more overhead. The telephone at WBCQ should be ringing off the wall with people who want to say, have their say. Maximizing the freedoms that we do have is the message at VSI Radio International. Those who argue that the need for corporate sponsors on network radio somehow diminishes the scope of viewpoints that are presented to the general public should be all the more excited about getting onto international shortwave. As the prices are so low, you don't need any corporate sponsors. You'll spend more at a night at the cinema or the bowling alley than you would to get an hour here on WBCQ. So, really, where oh where are all those who feel slighted and feel that they can't get their voice out? I think that anyone who argues that mainstream media is biased is correct, but I don't see how else it could be. You know, Fox may claim they try to be fair and balanced, but even one's estimation of what constitutes objective news, that can be very subjective. So if you have something to say, come down and put it on the air at WBCQ. Give Alan Weiner a call, send him an email, and get yourself on the air. Once more, if you'd like to send email to VSI Radio International, write to feedback@vsiradio.org. That's feedback@vsiradio.org. Feel free to give any comments or ask any questions you might like or offer suggestions for future shows. I'll leave you now once more with the words of Dobelli with regard to what your life might be like a little bit different if you were to give up mainstream news, news altogether. After a while, you'll realize that despite your personal news blackout, you have not missed and you're not going to miss any important facts. If some bit of information is truly important to your profession, your community, your family, or your community, you will hear it in time. From your friends, from your mother-in-law, or whomever you talk to or see. When you are with your friends, ask them if anything important is happening in the world. The question is a great conversation starter, though most of the time the answer will be, not really.
Are you afraid that living a news-free existence will make you an outcast at parties? Well, you might not know that Lindsay Lohan went to jail, but you will have more intelligent facts to share about the cultural meaning of the food you're eating or the discovery of extrasolar planets. Never be shy about discussing your news diet. People will be fascinated. Now, society does need journalism, but in a different way. Investigative journalism is relevant in a society. We need more hardcore journalists digging into meaningful stories. We need reporting that polices our society and uncovers the truth. The best such example was Watergate. But important findings don't have to arrive in the form of news. Often, reporting is not time-sensitive. Long journal articles and in-depth books are fine forums for investigative journalism. And now that you've gone cold turkey on the news, you'll have time to read them. Thank you once again for joining me this week on VSI Radio International. I hope you'll tune in next week. And for the rest of the night, to those of you who have ears to hear, please stay tuned for Brother Stare.
Oh, If you've enjoyed this presentation, visit www.justrightmedia.org for more programming that's not right-wing, it's just right.